The Big Story is brought to you by Scotia iTrade. There's a trader in all of us. Welcome to the biggest stories of 2018. Every day this week, we will sit down with one of our favorite people to talk to them about the issues that dominated this year. This isn't a week of best ofs, though. These are new conversations that look back at the stories that mattered in 2018 and take aim at where they'll go next year. So please enjoy day one, entertainment.
You get to decide what kind of king you are going to be. Don't freeze.
I never freeze.
That was the sound of the most important movie of the year. As 2018 began, the idea that Black Panther would smash box office records, blow past Titanic, roll up a 97% score on Rotten Tomatoes, and push a Marvel film into the awards conversation was not exactly a given. There had never been a blockbuster superhero movie with an all-black cast, and now it seems like a given that there'll be several more. And if the heroes of Wakanda had been alone, that would have been one thing, but then came August.
I can't afford this. So your family is rich?
We're comfortable.
That is exactly what a super rich person would say.
Crazy Rich Asians, another smash success, another non-white cast, another critical darling, and another round of headlines about how 2018 is the year that diversity finally arrived in Hollywood. So has it? Isn't that a bit much to place on the shoulders of two movies, no matter how good they are? And if it is, how will we know when diversity has arrived? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Andre Demise is a writer and a podcaster, co-host of Black Tea, which you can find on frequencypodcastnetwork.com. Andre, tell me about going to see Black Panther.
I watched Black Panther for the first time for the Globe and Mail. I was invited to a screener so I could do an essay for the Globe and Mail on the film. And, you know, I wrote about the fact that it just captured, like, everything that black audiences needed to see in film. It got some Afro-mythology, Afro-futurism. It got powerful black characters. Almost the entire cast was black. There was, you know, like a smattering of non-black characters, which normally you don't see that in Hollywood blockbuster film.
Right.
The second time I saw it, it was for a fundraiser that I helped the Black Business and Professionals Association put together, which had, I think it was something to the effect of like 350 or 400 youth from across the GTA, plus their parents and other special guests and so forth. And we crowded into the Cineplex Theater at Yorkdale, and we all watched the film together. And it was just like this like really fun, raucous affair. It was actually pretty well covered, I think. And it was just great to walk into the theater, see it full of black youth. I mean, most of them were, you know, 17 or younger, all the way down to like kids and toddlers sitting there with their parents. And just the look on their face as the film credits were opening up, I was like, man, this is what I really, really wanted to see coming into this film. So it was great. And I think it was a landmark moment in film. But then I remember that was this year.
Yeah.
That was earlier. That seems like 5 years ago.
It's been a long 2018.
Oh my gosh. The fire hose of the bipolarity of the news cycle throughout this year, where there's been like amazing highs and just horrific lows, just distorts my sense of time. So
yeah.
I think we're almost at a point of, I would say, saturation, not for being able to have diverse and inclusive movies, but in sense of, how many TV shows and how many movies can you actually consume?
There's just so much out there. Endless stream of content, like endless. And you have these lists that like you'll get to it and you never will.
I looked at the New York Times list for best TV shows and I was like, I haven't even seen a quarter of these shows. And normally that's not me. I usually try to keep up on like what's you know really good in these streets. And there's just so much content out there that it's hard to keep up with. So I think what's happening now is that you're going to start to see a certain amount of segmentation. Like people are just going to be able to find what suits them, what suits their taste. And I think for a lot of audiences who come from non-white communities, they're going to be looking for film and TV properties that do accurately reflect their experiences and to some extent reflects the world that they live in.
Does Black Panther do that?
Well, I should certainly hope that there isn't like a secret society of people with like mega futuristic technology that could upset the balance of the world's military and global economy. I should certainly hope not.
I actually hope that there is because we need them desperately.
Well, you know, given what's happening in the world right now, I know that escapism is, it's an easy out for a lot of people, but I'm actually a lot more interested in exploring things that have actually happened in history. And I think what Black Panther did, in a sense, was open that door.
Yeah.
So Lupita Nyong'o and Danai Gurira are putting together a film about the Dahomey Amazon tribe, which was a West African tribe, which was composed of mostly women. That is an actual historical story that they're putting together. It's gonna follow the story of this this tribe that fought colonizers. And I'm thinking, this is what I've been waiting for since I was a little kid. You know, yeah. I could walk into a movie theater and see everybody's history reflected except my own. I remember one time I walked into Chapters. This might have been maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And I just happened to be walking through the history section. And I just noticed this. Like, I wasn't looking for it. I just noticed it. Was that in the history section, you could find Canadian history. And it was everything from, you know, like the Carrière de Bois to the War of 1812 to the Great War. You could find everything in Canadian history you could possibly want. You could find medieval history. You could find European history. You could find East Asian history. But what you could not find was African history. All you could find in that section had to do with warfare and conflict and genocide. I remember the one book that stood out to me in that section was First Kill Your Parents. And that being the most prominent book in the African history section, that made my heart sink. And to see the difference between then and now, where audiences seem to crave more about African history, African folklore, etc., and that Hollywood's actually willing to back these projects, that encourages me. And I really hope that I don't hear the name Wakanda again until the Black Panther sequel.
Right.
I don't want to hear it, because what I was kind of afraid of with this film was that everyone would sort of dump their hopes and dreams as to what Black representation looks like in film, especially in action films, into just this one property,
yeah,
rather than opening the door to new stories being told.
Well, that was my next question for you, is that in the 11 months since then, I guess, which might feel like 11 years, have you seen a shift in the way we talk about movies featuring Black stars? Are there more of them coming?
Well, there's no way to not talk about it, because, you know, there are multiple organizations. I know Nielsen does a study of this. What every single one of them tends to find is that the more diversity you have, not just in front of the camera, so not just, you know, the amount of actors that are represented on screen who are of diverse backgrounds, but the more people behind the camera as well.
Yeah.
Everyone from directors to writers, producers, etc. The more diverse your film set, the better your movie's going to do, or the better your TV property is going to do. They just make more money. That shouldn't be the final metric as to whether or not something gets produced. It shouldn't just be about, is this going to make money?
It should also be, if it doesn't make money, then
well,
it's
if
not
it doesn't make money, the problem with that is that, you know, a lot of, it's not even just, you know, producers, but also people in media will say, well, I guess the whole diversity wave is over, and they'll just, you know, call the whole thing quits. The other sort of downside I see to this is that as we open up these properties to global markets, what we're starting to see now is that there's certain representation that can't be shown on screen because of the recurring fear of what the overseas market is going to think about it. I'm speaking specifically to LGBTQ characters and storylines.
Give me an example.
Well, for example, there was a Valkyrie in the movie Thor Ragnarok.
Okay.
Where Tessa Thompson's character, Valkyrie, is revealed by Thompson herself and also the film's producers, writers, etc., that she is a lesbian character. But you don't actually see that represented on screen. So there was a scene where all of the Valkyries were, you know, heading down to this massive fight with the main bad character, Hela. And you see Hela slaughter almost all of the Valkyries, and she kills one. And Valkyrie's lover, supposedly, you could see her sort of, you could see her sorrow at this one character being killed. But you never actually saw anything between the two that would indicate that these two had a relationship. And that's happened in so many movies. For example, in the Solo Star Wars movie, Lando Calrissian was indicated or heavily hinted to be pansexual. You never actually saw that he was quote-unquote pansexual. He had an attachment to a robot character. But
But it's never articulated.
This was amazing to me. Like, you have this movie where it's not just people from Earth, but people from all sorts of different, like, planets and planes of existence practically, and to have two characters be shown to be in a romantic relationship that were not heterosexual, like, that was just too far out of the pale. And again, it always comes down to, well, we're worried about what the overseas market, which is really a shorthand for saying that we think Chinese and we think South Asian audiences are not going to appreciate this, or that the governments may ban it. So there is a downside to that as well, where I think that certain people in Hollywood and in the media are using the specter of bigotry elsewhere,
right,
to justify their own bigotries. So I think there is a bit of a downside to that, but I think with enough audience pushback, we're going to get past this at some point.
So I wanted to ask about that, because I always kind of like to talk about these kind of issues as, like, well, where were we? And so how much progress has been made, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny that you brought up the subtext of LGBT characters, because Do you remember Professor Albus Dumbledore?
Yes.
So he's gay.
According to whom?
According to J.K. Rowling.
Right. So why didn't
she
just write it?
But not according to the books.
Yeah. Why didn't she just write it in the books? It's almost like every time there's a new Harry Potter related property to be sold, J.K. Rowling lets slip the secret that a character was secretly Asian, or a character is secretly gay, wasn't in the books, or a character could be written as a black character, or, you know, it was never explicitly articulated in the books that Hermione Granger was supposed to be white, which actually, yes, it was. This kind of stuff, like this sort of like trickle-truthing of diverse characters is so annoying to me, because if that's the way it is, then just put it in the film.
Yeah.
Show it in the movie or write it in the book. Why do you have to be so worried about it? And I would say that for every person that would put your book down or choose to not watch your movie, I guarantee there are five more that actually will read your book or watch your movie or watch your TV show because they can see themselves represented.
Up next.
I think what it's really going to come down to is that white audiences are going to need to take a risk in going into a film or sitting down and watching a TV show and being able to see themselves reflected in the characters that are on screen.
We all have investment goals, and Scotia iTrade can help you reach yours. Access free tools and resources to sharpen your investment skills. Visit ScotiaiTrade.com to start direct investing today. Scotia iTrade, there's a trader in all of us.
Well, isn't the success of both Black Panther and the next movie we're going to talk about, Crazy Rich Asians, isn't that proof that, like, you can make these movies, you can ignore pretty much catering to a white audience, and you can still blast through expectations?
Well, the funny thing about that, that you mentioned those two movies, I mean, yes, of course you're going to be able to blast through that. And it wasn't just Black people watching Black Panther,
not.
And it wasn't just Asian people watching Crazy Rich Asians.
Right. Well, it's not just white people watching Iron Man either.
Well, exactly. And that's the part that, again, this is where people justify their own bigotry by pointing to an imaginary other people's bigotry.
Right.
Blackish, for example. The audience for Blackish, which is one of the most, you know, popular TV products out there right now, the audience is 74% white. So there never really has been a justification for this mindset. It's really just people saying, well, I don't think, because I wouldn't watch a quote-unquote black TV show, I think that other people are just like me. I'm a good person. I don't think I'm a bad person. And I don't think the other people who wouldn't watch a show like this are bad people. So yeah, a lot of other people have to be just like me.
You are as articulate and passionate about your blackness as anybody I know.
Okay.
What percentage of media do you consume is white?
Oh, God. Almost all of it. I mean, there aren't really a lot of other choices. I read black writers wherever I can. I actually wrote an article in the Literary Review of Canada a couple of years ago where I said that I was actually going to make a point to read black fiction authors. Like, I was just going to make it a point to do so. And I actually went through a whole year where I didn't read anybody who wasn't a black fiction author. And it was actually edifying. Just when you read somebody like Nketi Okorafor, or you read Octavia Butler, which I did for the first, I'm embarrassed to say, it was for the first time, 2 years ago, you get a perspective from your own community that you would think that you should have already had. Like, the perspective of black women in fantasy fiction wasn't something that I'd explored heavily before. And now that I have, I think to myself, like, man, what was I missing out on all these years?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that having a varied media diet is a very good thing to have. But you're right. There, you know, for a very long time, especially being such a big fantasy and sci-fi fan as I am and have been, to not see my own stories reflected in that medium, or even to watch movies, for example, I watch a Lord of the Rings marathon every single year, which I will repeat again this year, and watching the movies back to back to back. But there are no black people in the movie, any of the three movies, and they're 3 hours long. So
yeah,
there was plenty of time to have somebody in the film. But to watch the original three Lord of the Rings movies back to back to back and not see a single black character in it, that I think is in a way damaging to the mind.
Because
it's almost like saying that we don't have our own stories to tell and that we don't belong in the stories that other people tell either.
So what to your mind then would represent a Hollywood movie where that works? Like, there was, this was a parody, it was later revealed, but there was social media post that said that the new Lord of the Rings television series is going to feature elves of all colors, including black elves and Asian elves. And people got, well, it's social media, so people naturally did their horrible polarizing
thing. Yeah, that sort of thing happens,
but like,
again. But there are black elves, as a matter of fact, in the original lore. You know, there's a place called Svartalfheim, which was the place of the Dark Elves. Which
dropped some Elvish on.
Yeah, well, listen, man, if you're going to go toe-to-toe with a fantasy fan, this is what you're going to get, all right? There are Black Elves. As a matter of fact, there are Dark Elves in the original Dungeons & Dragons book series. There's a whole race of Dark Elves, even though I think that the representation for those elves was, in retrospect, horrendously problematic. but it's not like they didn't exist, not only in, you know, fantasy folklore that we're used to in pop culture, but also in the original fantasy folklore that all of this was drawn from. So I don't know what problem people would have with that.
You do know what problem people would have with it.
I know exactly what it is. Is people don't want to see, they like to live in their own bubble, in their own worlds where it's just them. It's like the treehouse with the boys only club sign plastered to the outside and nobody else is allowed in besides us. But unfortunately, you know, for people that have been able to enjoy that level of hermetic ceiling for the last 40 odd years in fantasy and in geek culture, you know, I was reading comic books since I was, say, I think probably like 3.5, 4 years old. My mom, when she would go on her trips to Byway, every so often would come back with a stack of comic books that she's able to pick up for like a dollar. The old, like, disused comic books, she'd bring them back. And that's how I learned about X-Men. That's how I got into DC characters. That's even how I got into Image, et cetera. So I've been reading comic books for almost as long as I've been able to read, period. I'm not new to this. And most people that are involved in the culture are not new to this either. I think it's just new to the people who, if you were, say, a comic book fan from, I don't know, Boise, Idaho, and you got together with your comic book friends and they were all white, it might be shocking to you to find out that, you know, kids from Chicago and Miami and New York City were into comic books as well. But just because that's your life experience, having a coterie of geeks that look just like you, doesn't mean that you get to extend your sphere of influence across all geekdom. Unfortunately, you got to share with the rest of us.
So brass tacks then, because this is the end of 2018, did that exclusive treehouse get blown up this year, or is it a few big blockbusters that are kind of being held up as signs of progress?
I think there's a few big blockbusters that are progress that have managed to blow up the paradigm of what pop culture and geek culture is supposed to look like. I think of, for example, Shang-Chi, which is a Marvel property that's not very well known. So Shang-Chi is Marvel's Master of the Martial Arts.
See, I didn't know that.
Well, not a whole lot of people do.
But I mean, as far as comic books go, I should probably know most of the Marvel characters, but I've never heard of this one, which means it must be at least somewhat obscure.
It is. Shang-Chi is, I would say, like one of Marvel's sort of like B or C tier heroes, where there's not a huge following there. But here's what I think Marvel did, was they release, say, Luke Cage on Netflix. They release Jessica Jones on Netflix. They release The Avengers. Like, they have all of these properties where there are a broad range of diverse characters and audiences are clamoring for more. And then there's East Asian audiences that are like, okay, so what about us?
Right.
Do we exist in your culture whatsoever?
Which brings us to like the hero that would pop to my mind, Iron Fist.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, the Invincible Iron Fist. So here's the issue with that, was that there was a movement on Twitter and Tumblr, like on social media, where fans were asking Marvel to cast an Asian character as Iron Fist. A lot of people were gunning for Louis Tan, who is an incredible martial artist, a very handsome fellow, and a very good actor at the same time. So what more could you ask for? Cast him as Iron Fist, and we will watch the show. And instead, they cast somebody. It was Finn Jones, who previously was on Game of Thrones. He played Loras Tyrell, which I expect like 90% of your audience to not know that name offhand. But Finn Jones is an English dude, kind of scruffy looking, not very well in shape, an okay actor, and not a martial artist at all. As a matter of fact, the choreography for the fight scenes that they did on Iron Fist, I read somewhere that they were just doing them like on the spot, like ad hoc. They hadn't actually really planned the choreography for the fight scenes ahead of time.
Considering other Marvel films, that's
this madness. I can't even imagine having a martial arts property where you don't have hire some of the people from the original Beijing Opera. You know, hire, say, Yuen Wu-Ping, who's just been everywhere in Hollywood choreographing amazing fight scenes. He was the fight director for the Matrix and a million other properties. Why not hire him and hire an actor that, say, East Asian audiences would be familiar with, and you've got a hot property on your hands? And they failed to do that, and it flopped. It bombed. Out of all of Marvel's Netflix, I would say probably out of all of Marvel's media properties altogether, it probably did the worst. And now they've just announced that they're going to bring a Shang-Chi movie to the big screen, which to me kind of reads as a mea culpa, because like I said, Shang-Chi is not a very well-known property. But because they've been able to make such huge inroads into diversity elsewhere, and they realize this is where they really messed up, was the Invincible Iron Fist, and they bring this character in to say, Let's start over. Let's have a reboot. Let's have a really, really good martial arts film with a really good martial arts actor. Let's put some money behind it, put some marketing behind it, and see how it does. And that's, I'm actually really looking forward to it. Being a fan of the old, like, Shaw Brothers kung fu films, and that's how I got into martial arts myself, this is something I'm personally really looking forward to.
Marvel is kind of its own entity in that they control so much of the blockbuster landscape, and they're able to kind of do things like that because they have properties that people will eat up.
Mm-hmm.
Will some of the inroads they made this year with Black Panther, with Crazy Rich Asians, with A Wrinkle in Time and films like that, will they play a role in sort of having diverse, regular people, family drama movies? Is it a blockbuster only?
That's sort of the danger of placing this multi-billion dollar machine and diversity in the same box at the same time, is that like every quote unquote diverse property has to be this gigantic blockbuster. Otherwise, why are we even here? You mentioned A Wrinkle in Time. And while I love Ava DuVernay to death and I love her work, I didn't especially love A Wrinkle in Time. I just thought it wasn't really true to the novel, et cetera. And I think a lot of other people saw that too. And that's where I think people were starting to see sort of like cracks in the armor of this whole diversity argument. And what I'm really hoping is that, you know, we get to see family films, we get to see romantic comedy films, we get to see films from every genre cast with diverse groups of people, and it not be a conversation about diversity. It's simply, we're watching movies because that is what the world looks like around us. We shouldn't have to have a conversation about whether this film counts as an Asian movie or this film counts as a black movie or whether it should be considered mainstream. I just want us to be able to go to the movies and watch movies. I really wish that sometime soon we can leave this conversation behind, because we should have gotten there already. I think what it's really going to come down to is that white audiences are going to need to take a risk in going into a film or sitting down and watching a TV show and being able to see themselves reflected in the characters that are on screen. Because regardless of our backgrounds, our differences, etc., there is a kinship and a commonality that we all have in our humanity together that you should at some fundamental level be able to relate to. And I know that we can do this because I've been doing the same thing for white characters the entire time that I've watched movies. So if we can do it, then so can you.
Thanks, Andre.
Thank you.
Andre Demise, writer, and most importantly to you, podcaster. Go check out Black Tea. You can find it on the Frequency Podcast Network. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotia iTrade. You can visit scotiaitrade.com to start direct investing today. And you can find more big stories at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can talk to us about them on social media at Big Story Podcast, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And of course, you can subscribe, you can rate, you can review us and Black Tea wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple, on Google, on Stitcher, on Spotify, etc., etc. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.